As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All options are open. I think what we've got in camp has the potential to be the answer.
You and me, we come from different worlds. You like to laugh at me when I look at other girls. Sometimes you're crazy and you wonder why. I'm such a baby cause the cowboys make me cry. But there's nothing I can do. I've been looking for a girl like you.
We're counting down the days till kickoff of week one. But not before one more preseason game, not before we discuss the last one, here on About Them Cowboys on The Athletic. We're joined by The Athletic Zone, Saad Youssef, and of course, John Machota on the Cowboys beat. And here to host this one, KT Fun Music Turner. Hey, KT.
Hello, Kent. Hello, gang. One more preseason game to go, and then we'll finally get right to it as we record this for you on the mid-afternoon evening of Monday, August 21st. Let's start with the big injury news there, John. Overshown, torn ACL, complete bummer. What a buzzkill weekend in the Metroplex. The Rangers got swept and the Cowboys lost two guys to big injuries. We'll start with Overshown.
I mean, you can take it in two different directions. I feel like you can take it in the it could be worse. They didn't lose a starter. They also didn't play any starters. But the flip side is that we just got done having a conference call with Mike McCarthy, and as he pointed out, you could say that out of that rookie class, DeMarvion Overshown was the star of it, and he had been the biggest standout of that group. And so to lose him for the season is a big loss. And then the other part of it is just the position that he plays. You know, I mean, linebacker depth was an issue, and that's one of the reasons that they drafted him, you know? And so because of that, it now makes me think that you could see them making a move potentially for a veteran linebacker, you know, how they did with Anthony Barr. I just think that they need some more depth at that spot. I mean, Devin Harper is going to get a lot of opportunities. Jabril Cox will get a lot of opportunities, but if they don't think one of those guys, or if both of them can't be adequate backups, I mean, here's the thing. Like, yes, the play that it happened on for Overshown is kind of a freaky play. It's out on the perimeter near the sideline and all that. But I look at just linebacker position in general, and it is a very, very dangerous position to play. The idea that you're going to go through full seasons with just one or two starting linebackers and are going to be healthy. I mean, those guys are involved in so many huge collisions that it's you're going to need good quality depth. You need at least three or four linebackers that you can count on. And he was certainly going to be one of them. And Dan Quinn was going to use him in a variety of ways. And so to lose him is a major blow. There's no question about that. But yeah, so for me, linebacker depth is of a concern now.
Yeah, I think Overshown, one thing that really stood out to me back from even Oxnard was just how, you know, the way that he was playing was really solid, but it was more so the way that people were talking about him. I mean, the way Mike McCarthy was talking about him was one thing, but Micah Parsons was really starting to take him under his wing a little bit. Micah talked about, you know, in one of his earlier press conferences in Oxnard, talked about telling Overshown, like, you know, how he needs to be good at one particular thing. So, or needs to be really good in one particular area so that the coaching staff knows that he has this thing that he can be used for. And they were just, you know, they were just talking him up a lot. And then his game against the Jaguars, I mean, that first quarter, it was all Damone Clark and DeMarvion Overshown. And so, like, you know, he was building up so much momentum. I think even when you look, and especially when you look at Dan Quinn's defense, the way that he uses Jayron Kearse, the way that he uses Micah Parsons, there's a lot of, there was a lot of potential. I would say Overshown was probably the most consistent and best player from the rookie class for the Cowboys. I know Deuce Vaughn is, you know, a close, to me, is a close second or maybe 1A, 1B, but especially on defense, I mean, that was the guy. So it definitely is a bummer, but as John also mentioned, like, the reality is that they didn't lose a starter. This doesn't damper the season or any of the expectations. It's just what kind of, I think what you said, KT, it's just a bummer.
Yeah, I think I keep coming back to something too. With a team like this that's in seemingly go-for-it mode, as they should be, you start to, like, if we're going to kind of evolve the conversation a little bit, first of all, yes, hope Overshown recovers quickly, all that, you know, terrible, right? But, and to see Mike McCarthy praise him, like you said, Saad, that was a little unorthodox too, just to, like, call out one rookie and say he's been the rookie of rookies. But you start looking at, like, free agents, it's less, I think it's a little more difficult to find, like, that position on the waiver wire if you wanted to do something when cuts start happening, because he's kind of not your standard linebacker. Obviously, that's all kind of changing a little bit, you know, if you want to call it a linebacker, if you want to call it a strong safety, whatever it is in the Dan Quinn defense. It's a little more of a hybrid type of position. And, you know, not every team runs that same defense. So it's like finding that type of guy with those type of measurables that you're looking for who can do that. You know, it'd be interesting if the Cowboys move off of that and maybe they go for a standard, or they just say, hey, we've got what we have in-house and we'll be fine and we'll figure it out. And maybe that's the play. But it is interesting with, you know, cuts coming up in a week. They'll at least have some things they can look at on a position that, if you want to call it linebacker, has been devalued by many teams across the league. This team, not so much, you know, the way they're kind of attacking that position.
Yeah, I don't see them finding a DeMarvion Overshown out there or anybody like that. No. Has his type of skill set, because that team's not going to let that person out of the building. I think it just to mean a linebacker, I should say, that has had some success on the field in the NFL, you know. We really don't know what they have right now in Jabril Cox and Devin Harper. I mean, you can see a little bit in preseason games, and that's fine, but are they ready for that role Sunday night? You know, all the lights are on, and Damone Clark goes down, and now all of a sudden we're going to need 50-plus snaps out of you. Are they ready for that? Your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah, and the unknown for two things. One, what level are Jabril Cox and, you know, anybody else, Devin Harper or whatever, are ready for. But the other thing also is the health factor that, you know, John mentioned early on. With we've seen this in Dallas throughout, right? With Sean Lee, we saw it. You can call that whatever. Maybe he was a little more quote unquote injury prone. Leighton Vander Esch has had trouble with injuries throughout his career as well. So, I mean, you know, can they ride a lucky streak and maybe go the entire 17 plus games without injuries? Again, it's possible, just like it's possible that Jabril Cox is ready, it's possible that Harper is ready, but there's no given that they are, and there's no given that you're not going to just be absolutely, you know, rampaged by injury.
I mean, I just break it down to two sides of the ball. Like, for me, it's the biggest concern on defense is now the depth at linebacker. The biggest concern on offense is the depth on the offensive line. In both cases, if you tell me the starters are going to stay healthy, that's not a concern. Their starters are in a good spot. You feel pretty good about both those positions, but you also know that it's unlikely in an NFL season. I mean, they've barely played two preseason games and they've lost a major player. So
yeah,
you have to prepare for the injuries to happen. It sucks, but it's part of the game.
Yeah, and I saw, and I don't want to sound this too long, but, like, I think my point was, like, because of the just the way that position is here, the way they see that here, it's like different than, hey, a wide receiver got hurt. Oh, man, we got to get a wide receiver somewhere. Or we're looking in-house at our wide receiver candidates or whatever. Running back, it's just less easily definable with what, you know, Overshown is, because he's kind of playing two positions in this day and age, which, you know, some teams do that, but not every team does. So, bummer news there. And another reason why I vote no preseason. But that's, you know. And then John Stevens. I mean, it looked like he was making a case. I don't think he was going to make the roster. But making a case to get stashed on the practice squad. And it's a bummer too, man. It's a guy who's having a great camp and a great preseason so far. And then looks like we're losing him too.
Yeah, I would say if you look down at a roster and said, okay, out of all the training camp practices you're at, who stood out the most? I don't think you'd get to maybe 10, 11 before you say John Stevens Jr. There were just a lot of catches he made that, you know, I mean, like wide receivers turning into tight ends, that's where they're going to stand out naturally. And in a training camp setting, you know, that stands out. But even in that first preseason game, he looked the part. And yeah, was it enough that I would have had him higher on the depth chart than Schoonmaker or Ferguson or Hendershot? Or probably not, but he certainly was pushing McCune and he was in the conversation. So yeah, it's crazy too. I'm just like, you watch the replay of the play that happened on, you know, it in a way it kind of reminds me a little bit of, it's not the same, but in a way it reminded me of like kind of Blake Jarwin is just running a route in SoFi Stadium and all of a sudden just goes to the ground and there's really no contact from anybody else, and you just, you know, that's never good when that happens. It sucks. But it, like I said, I mean, I guess it's part of the game, and I know people will blame turf because obviously that's where this happened at, but I mean, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, with Stevens also, the other thing was that I thought he could have started to give a push for that number three spot if he had another good game, another good week or something like that, because, and the reason why I say it's not even necessarily that he would be taking over Hendershot. I think Ferguson and Schoonmaker are the top two, but it's more that I think the way that John Stevens is and what his build and stature is, I think you would have had a lot harder time passing him through the other 31 teams if he had another good week, if he had another good preseason game. I think you feel better about keeping him on the roster and trying to get Hendershot through than you do with John Stevens, because he has a lot of those very raw, interesting, intriguing skill sets. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if at the start of the 2024 season, like, your tight end roster depth chart was exactly that: Ferguson, Schoonmaker, and Stevens. I could see that being the 2024 opening day lineup. But it was getting interesting because I agree. I think Hendershot still has the leg up on him. But I think if Stevens, you know, we talk about red zone target, red zone ability and stuff, he kind of had that specialty going for him, and I think he would have been a lot harder to get through if he had another good week.
Different players, all that stuff. It's like when we were all kind of, I said we were all, some in the draft community were big fans of Darnell Washington of Georgia. And he ended up falling to the third round because he had a knee issue as well that doctors had detected. But it was like, okay, well, what if John Stevens can kind of be that version of that, a little more explosive guy, get up the seams a little bit more. And then you're like, great, with Ferguson and Schoonmaker being your, you know, it's very reductive to say safety net, you know, but we're talking safe throws for the most part. Intermediate area guys. It's like, oh, there's an explosive guy. Can we just tack on the end of the roster there and, you know, maybe see if we can figure something out? And just sucks, man. I don't know. Preseason injuries bum everyone out, you know? They bum everyone out. It's, I don't know why it affects more when guys are out for the year in the preseason than even in week one, because I feel like, well, at least they were playing a game that mattered. It's so hard. But I wonder what percentage of NFL players, what percent, oh, it's hard. Okay, full players, whole league, what percentage would say, yes, we need at least two preseason games?
Well, the problem with that,
it all depends on who you're talking to. Are you talking about starters and guys that are playing? It doesn't matter. They don't want to play, and most of them aren't going to play. But if you're talking about these guys like John Stevens most certainly wants to play in the preseason, because that's going to be his chance to try and make a roster. John Stevens will be fine with five preseason games.
What do you say that
today? Yeah, I mean, if you, like, I think if you think back to, I think, Victor Cruz, right? Right. I mean, I to me, when you talk about a guy literally making the roster because of preseason, I think back to Victor Cruz, if I'm remembering correctly, he had some monster preseason. I mean, look at Kevontae Turpin last year. I mean, he probably makes the roster because of what he did in the preseason. So, yeah, exactly right. I mean, it depends on – I was going to say depends on when you do the survey, because if you're doing the survey midway through the regular season, most people at that point are going to not really care about the preseason. Do the survey right now,
yeah,
and, you know, there's going to be a lot more people that want preseason right now.
The preseason's like if you were going to go to the Arlington Renegades game and there's a chance Dak might take a few snaps or something.
Yeah. Oh, it's close like
a little,
to...
It's like a developmental league. It's like Dallas Cowboys B, if you're doing an MLS term or something like that.
I mean, it's close to like 10 years ago, right? I mean, this was a long time ago, but Sean Lee was like, yeah, we need one. Because I think we need one game to hit and get acclimated. And who knows how that should change, because they don't hit as much in practice and all that stuff. Oh, that's been like that for a while. It's amazing, though. Like, I'm like surprised, like, Trevor Lawrence playing, Pat Mahomes playing. Like, I'm seeing all these guys that go and play and get ready. Mm-hmm. I am a big fan. As hard as I am on Mike McCarthy, I'm a big fan of his no starters. Like,
yeah.
No, like, we're going to make sure we're good in games that matter. I don't get his back much, but on this one, I will.
Great point.
I'm a huge fan of that. I can't justify, like, losing important players in games that don't matter. It's my same argument as bowl games. I mean, I realize it's very sports guy debate here, but when you start talking about nothing being on the line, except for, as you guys are saying, these guys at the end of the roster, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're
just talking. I'm just talking about my sports thoughts here. That's all.
We've seen it here, right? In Seattle in 2016. So, I mean, you know, that when that kind of situation happens, that really makes you think. I think at the end of the day, though, the preseason has value for those guys more so than even what, like, you know, something like a Renegades game would, because you know, a lot of these guys, they're not just trying to make the Cowboys roster. They're trying to put. You know, stuff on tape for 31 other teams as well.
Sure.
And, you know, those teams are I personally know players who have literally gone and earned roster spots. I mean, he's now with the Arizona Cardinals, but, you know, Carrollton, David Blau, like, he had a game, you know, somebody who I know from my past, but, like, he had a game as a Cleveland Brown against the Detroit Lions in the preseason that the Detroit Lions saw and then picked him up because of that. So, you know, there is an advantage to not just what you're doing fighting for a Cowboys roster spot, but also, you know, 31 other teams kind of watching you.
So, watching the game, oh, wait, one more injury, I guess. Waletzko, did we get good news on Waletzko there today, John?
Nothing new today, but it's his shoulder. It's not the same shoulder that's been an issue the last couple of years, but Mike McCarthy in the conference call today sounded pretty optimistic that he'd be able to do something this week and could potentially even play on Saturday's preseason finale. So it doesn't seem like that one's too serious, and that's huge because as of right now, I think he's their clear next offensive lineman up. You know, he's their swing tackle right now. He's going to have a role immediately. So that sounds like they got away with one there, but it is also an issue that it's, you know, it was one shoulder last year. Now it's this shoulder. Is this going to be lingering? Is it something that, like, he's just always going to be dealing with? Can he play through it? So, I mean, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. But, you know, with him 100% or not, I mean, that offense, that those backup offensive linemen, I mean, that just, it's still, it's a huge question mark what they have there.
Can I ask a question real quick? So, who was the next guard up, would you say, right now?
Ball. It's Josh Ball.
Ball, yeah. And is that, yeah, would that change if Adoga was back?
I doubt it. I didn't see anything that made me think that Chuma Adoga pushed anybody for one of those spots. I think they would give Ball the first chance, and if it was to, let's say, Tyler Biadasz to go down, maybe then they would go with like Farniak or Hoffman. But I think if it's one of the guards were to go down, I think they would go to Ball.
And also, like, I thought, you know, like you said, it depends on the shuffling, but, you know, Richards would, I think, also be in that conversation as well. Before Adoga, I think Richards would be in that conversation.
If one of the tackles went, God forbid, would they move Tyler, put Ball in. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I think there's two possibilities, and in both of them, I think that you're screwed.
Well, we kind of
okay.
That,
so
right?
Okay, here, which tackle's going down? I'll tell you what would go on.
Tyron.
Okay, Tyron. Tyler Smith goes out to left. Now Josh Ball is your left guard.
I'm not going.
Everything
to
fixed.
Here.
Right tackle no. goes down. Maybe they would keep the left side the same and put Letzko in at right tackle. So yeah. Maybe that's a little bit better of a situation because he's playing next to Zach and it's right tackle, whatever. But I wouldn't feel great about that either.
Yeah, there's no way to really feel good about it. Okay. Well, look, weird one. Obviously,
I mean, you can get by. Let's be honest here. It's not like all of a sudden the game just ends and you're just like, well, they're going to get blown out now. You know, Letzko's in the game. No, it changes things. And your offense is going to not be able to be as explosive. You're going to have to, you know, really pare the game plan back. And you're going to have to probably, you know, the offense is not going to look as explosive as it could. But, I mean, there's still ways to win games. I mean, let's be honest. When they lost Dak, I don't think anybody thought they would go 4-1 without him. And, yeah, was it because Cooper Rush was throwing 3 touchdowns a game? No. I mean, they had to do it a little bit different. And this team's so loaded on defense, don't get me wrong. If that's to happen, it's not like, oh, yeah, they lost Tyron, like, season's over. No, it's not. But it just – the offense is definitely going to be different.
And by the way, this the conversation about this is what the entire league is dealing with doesn't matter because, I mean, it, you know, the entire league is not necessarily in a spot where the Cowboys are. And also – It's not a comparable if someone else's offense is dealing with the same thing your offense is. Their defense is still going to blow you up if you're not going to have, you know, the right offensive lineman in place. So all that means that everybody else's offense, because Mike McCarthy mentioned it today on the conference call again, all that means is that there's not really good, you know, reinforcement options to go through the waiver wire or anything like that. So that's basically all that means, but it's not – I think you will have to change things up. I do think going to more of a West Coast offense helps maybe a little bit in some areas of getting the ball out quick and things like that. But it's such a timing system and all that kind of stuff in general that it's still gonna hurt.
Yeah, and I also think like quarterbacks and coaches and all that are paid handsomely to get through some of that stuff. I was amazed by like Arizona just refusing to draft an offensive lineman for Kyler Murray. And it's like, Kyler, run for your life. But it's like, oh, we can take advantage of that. And who knows? Maybe it turns out differently. Maybe it turns out the same. Joe Burrow dealing with that. They've let offensive linemen go in Kansas City. Like, it's just the way it is. Like, you should be able to overcome those things. You get
And I think
multiples.
That they would make an argument that although Joe Burrow would be aided greatly if they would have drafted Penei Sewell, they went with Ja'Marr Chase, and I think there'd be a lot of people that would argue, well, Ja'Marr Chase has a more impactful role than Penei Sewell would, you know? And well, I'm sure you could find some other people out there that would argue the other way.
It's always about, to me, there. It's not as black and white. It's always about the degree of ineptitude. Like, you know, how bad is the offensive line? They did try to, you know, they got Lyle Collins, and it didn't work out that way, but, like, they tried. But at the same time, this wasn't a – you have David Carr and Andre Johnson and just like absolutely nothing in front of them. And it's just a bunch of ghosts playing offensive line. That at that point, it doesn't matter who your quarterback and receiver are. So it's about at least having something in place where, you know, then your quarterback and receiver can take advantage.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey,
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Do you guys have any, big time impressions from Saturday night's game that you want to get to? Any big notes? Obviously, you walk away from that game going, "Well, the offense is going to be fine from a depth, perspective." Wait, good running backs, wide receivers feels good now. If Jalen Tolbert is the Jalen Tolbert we're seeing, even losing John Stevens, you feel solid at tight end. You feel fine, like you can get through it, and there's nothing explosive there, but. Outside of that, I feel like, okay, the offense is on track.
Yeah, I don't think there was any huge takeaways from it. I thought it was a pretty boring game.
Yeah,
but then again, when you're not going to have any of your starters playing either side of the ball, I mean, you know, obviously people would like to see more from Mozzie Smith. I think that's pretty clear through two preseason games. And unfairly, people will say that he went to University of Michigan and Taco Charlton went to University of Michigan, and so they'll make these parallels because they both play on the defensive line. But I think it's much too early for that. But I would say that would be one of the big takeaways from that on the negative side, that you still haven't seen as many flash plays as maybe you'd hope from a first-round pick. But, hey, maybe it takes him a little bit longer than some guys because of the position he's played. So there's that. Deuce Vaughn looks like he's ready for some type of a role. I'm not saying that he needs to necessarily get, 15, 20 touches a game, but he certainly looks ready that from beginning week one, you need to find ways to get him the ball. And then Jalen Tolbert is just, I feel like every time he's out there, he just continues to show you who the player was that they drafted last year in the third round. There's a lot of things that happened last year where you would go, man, third round pick on this guy? They talked about they considered him in the second over Sam Williams, I don't really see it. And now we're starting to see, oh, this is why, and he too looks like it's not like just Jalen Tolbert should plan on like, hey, if someone goes down, be ready. Like, I could see him getting a couple balls right off the bat, right week one against the Giants. And so that's a good sign. And the other thing is, like, Saad and I were watching the game, and I would say you kind of would hope that they would have given Brandon Aubrey that shot at that 45-yard field goal late as opposed to going for it on fourth down. I think you would have got more out of that. But judging by the conference call today, Mike McCarthy sounds pretty confident in Brandon Aubrey, but I think seeing him kick a 45-yarder in Seattle would have built up your confidence a little bit more.
That last part was my, I guess, bigger takeaway from most of the game. I mean, other than Deuce Vaughn and Jalen Tolbert shouldn't play against the Raiders on Saturday, in my opinion. I think Brandon Aubrey, you got nothing out of Will Greer turning into Bob Greasy getting sacked by Bob Lilly in the Super Bowl. Like, there's just nothing that you got from that. And even if they had converted it, you were not going to get anything from that. I think Brandon Aubrey has only kicked one field goal in two games, and it was a 29-yarder. So you've seen nothing from him. And I can't imagine. I mean, well, obviously, hopefully he gets some opportunity against the Raiders. But if his first and by the way, it's not even just about the game. Even in practices, they're not letting him kick, or they're not asking him to kick anything that begins with a five. So, I mean, it's all 40 and under. So I think I just would like to see a lot more from Brandon Aubrey, and it's not his fault. I saw some people say, like, well, I mean, he's made everything. Well, one, he's 4 for 5 on extra points in the games and 1 for 1 in field goal. It's not his fault, but I would like to see more from him. The only other thing that I would tack on to what John said, probably Eric Scott. I thought, he had a kind of a weird game. He had a couple of really good pass breakups. He had a couple of plays that, weren't necessarily that were kind of stepped back a little bit. So Eric Scott, after what he showed in camp, was kind of uneven, but that's better than what he was against the Jaguars, I think. So he's probably the only other guy.
Yeah, uneven's a good way to put that with Eric Scott, because I kind of feel like, and these aren't all apples to apples, these guys are all a little bit different, but there's a little bit of that with me over the years with Kelvin Joseph and Nashawn Wright, where they'll show you some flash plays, but then also they'll give up some stuff where you're just like, man, I don't know if that guy's ready. And when I see that stuff, for some reason, my mind just goes right to Jerron Bland, and I'm just like, that's crazy how we never really saw that from Jerron Bland. It's just been pretty solid right from the rip, and then he started making plays, like, you know, and then obviously goes to the draft where you're just like, how'd this guy not go in the first two rounds, you know? So that corner spot is, it's a tricky one to project, you know? Obviously, we've talked about this a lot when it comes around the time of the draft, like, you know, whether you're talking about Dan Quinn and what they did in Seattle to Will McClay. I mean, line one is preferring those like longer corners, you know, and that's generally what they're looking for. So we get that, but it is funny how, you know, you can take a guy in the second or third round and there's a guy that goes in the fifth or sixth that you're just like, why didn't this guy go a lot higher? This guy seems like he's way more ready for it. So I don't know.
Okay. Well, you're only got Kelvin Joseph's been okay. You know?
Yeah.
This makes you think that, like, and this kind of goes back to the Overshown thing. Rarely you're getting these situations where all three of your first round picks just completely hit, you know?
Yeah.
All three of your first, second, and third round picks, like, in the same year, like, rarely do they all hit. And not to say that Overshown will work out, but, like, from an immediate standpoint, you're sitting there going, well, he was our best one so far. We'll see what happens. A long way to go here.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anyone had thoughts on Schoonmaker being your starting tight end this year, or number one tight end, or whatever you want to call it. Let's go to just kind of a little camp overview, some kind of camp awards. You guys obviously were you had the final practice. Okay, you had fisticuffs, and then we break camp and get out of there before the hurricane, and now we got to head on home. Let's go down the board here, offensive MVP of camp. And I guess we could include the preseason games in camp, I guess.
I don't think my MVPs would even get a chance to even get a helmet to throw on during the preseason games, but offensive MVP for me is no question. It's CeeDee Lamb. Like, CeeDee Lamb has ascended each season he's been in the NFL, and I've seen nothing that would make me think he's not going to continue doing the same thing, and his fourth season being the best one he's had. Everything about his game, it just seems like he adds something to it, and maybe it's just he gets more and more confident every year, and, you know, him and Dak just seem like they're on the same page. I just see a huge year from CeeDee Lamb.
Because John went that direction, I'm not even going to touch any of the starters, and I'll give you two guys, a practice guy and an overall guy. For me, in practice, maybe not the MVP, he has been the best, but I liked a lot what I saw from Jalen Brooks. It hasn't translated to preseason games, so I'm using that caveat. I'm not including the preseason in this, just like practices. Mm-hmm. I thought Jalen Brooks looked good. And then if you're including the preseason games, and again, not talking about any of the starters or anything, obviously Deuce Vaughn. You know, from what he did in practice and preseason, and not being, you know, a starter, I think those would be my two guys.
And then the next up would be, for me, would be Brandon Cooks and Jalen Tolbert. And really, to be honest with you, off of the four people we just named, I think there's a little bit of a separation until whoever would be fifth for you.
Yeah.
And I think fifth, if I just had to do it right now off the top of my head, I might say, if we're combining everything, I might say Jake Ferguson. Yeah, I just really feel like he's taking another step. I'm not saying that he's give him exactly the workload that they gave, you know, Schultz last year. But if you told me at the end of the year that he did get that type of, you know, targets and what, it would not surprise me. He really looks like he is ready for that. That bigger role. Sure.
He looks the part for sure.
Yeah,
like he looks comfortable. All right, defensive MVP.
Yeah, I mean, I think my defensive MVP is the defensive MVP of the NFL. The best way I can describe Micah Parsons is, so every year around this time, I can't watch every team's training camp. I can watch the Dallas Cowboys because that's what I'm being paid to do, and that's what I'm doing at pretty much all day. Like, there's not really times where, other than eating and then, like, maybe talking to some friends, you just really don't have a lot of time during training camp to do anything but follow the team you're covering. And so the way I'll explain how dominant Micah Parsons looked in training camp is that it was the most dominant performance I've seen, and I've seen some really dominant ones from Dez Bryant over the years. Especially because one, he was one of the top receivers in the league for 3 or 4 years during those camps. And two, a lot of those times, the corners they were putting on the other side of him, he was just going to moss anyway. And it was just like, you know, just dominance for, you know, days on end. And I honestly believe that Micah Parsons was even more dominant this year.
Again, I'm going to create my own little rubric, and I'm going to go practice player and then preseason as well. But this practice player is a starter, and I feel like you just can't talk about training camp without talking about Stephon Gilmore. I thought he's had a really good camp. He's been as advertised, everything you'd expect, on the field, off the field. You see him locking down receivers. You see him tutoring Trayvon Diggs, everything that you would expect. So from a practice standpoint, it'd probably be him. And then if I'm looping in the preseason as well, I'd probably say Damone Clark. You know, I think he's had a really solid camp all around and has really answered any questions there were about linebacker. Or that he can.
And I give a couple shout-outs to the Boise State veterans. DeMarcus Lawrence has been really good in camp. Leighton Vander Esch, too. As long as Leighton Vander Esch stays healthy, I think this could be a big year for Leighton. And then others, there's somebody else I was going to say on defense.
Sam Williams?
I was just going to say, you saw it in the preseason game. You know, there's been some times in training camp where, like, just because my expectations for Sam Williams were so high, I expected to see more flash plays and didn't. But in those two preseason games, you've definitely seen it. And he's a guy, you go back to OTAs and minicamp, you know, Micah talking about how they've had conversations of how Sam wants to be a double-digit sack guy. And that would not surprise me if he is. He should be able to stay fresh because he's obviously going to be playing behind Micah and DeMarcus Lawrence. But, yeah, that rotation, man, of Micah, Lawrence, Dorrance, Sam Williams, Dante Fowler. I mean, they'll be coming in waves, man. That group should be real solid. As long as Osa and Jonathan Hankins can stay healthy in the middle there, that defensive line is going to be a problem every single week.
Yeah, and then two other guys, one that we mentioned before, Overshown, had a really, really good camp and sure. Preseason. And then Trayvon Diggs, very interesting. Like, you know, it was a very Trayvon Diggs training camp. Like, just some really big plays and then just, like, some absolutely getting toasted plays.
Yeah.
Just a very, like, yeah, like, I would say if you're not asking about players and you're asking me more about moments, I would say Trayvon Diggs would be the very top of all the top defensive moments in training camp. But, yeah, he balances it out quite a bit.
You know, he reminds me of a little bit, Saad, and nobody, I guarantee you, nobody has ever made this comparison with Trayvon Diggs. But just because we were talking about it during the last preseason game, he's kind of like Brett Favre, where there's just like some stuff he does where you're just like, yeah, nobody can do that. So you're just going to deal with the other flip side stuff where sometimes they'll throw, you know, Brett would throw a pick where you're just like, Brett, why would you do that? Like, you have this cannon of an arm. You're one of the best playmakers in the league. Why would you throw that? And then you just are left scratching your head. But also, that's why Trayvon Diggs got paid. And that's why, you know, Brett Favre, there was never an issue about him being a starter no matter what team he was on.
Well, let's skip ahead here because I want to have time for John's big stadium piece that took over the Athletic National. And I will be stealing for my morning show tomorrow, too. Surprise make and surprise cut. That's a tough one, I know. And because you're still kind of balancing, still I could see a few things. But any names that come at you, I keep coming back to, whether it's fair or not, I keep coming back to Neville Gallimore. Although I don't know that it would surprise me if he, that's why I would put it there, just because of the draft capital. I guess technically I could put Kelvin Joseph there too, but I just don't think they're going to do that yet. That would be my surprise cut, though, would be Gallimore.
Yeah, I would agree with you on both those guys, and I would also agree with you that I don't see that happening, though, either. I think those are the two most... You know, because you say, let's say, like, Kelvin Joseph, and there will be people that will say, well, yeah, he hasn't really done anything, whatever. But I'm saying for a second-round pick, it's tough to cut a second-round pick. I mean, you have a lot of people in the building that are like, we invested a lot here. We're not going another direction. But, yeah, those two would be probably at the top of my list when I think about the defense. And then on offense, man, there's just not really an obvious person there because it's pretty cut and dry. What's that?
Is it one of the running backs? Like, is it Malik Davis? Is it?
If you think that that's a surprise, sure. I'm one of these people, and I could be wrong in this, but, like, you know, when we talk about that backup offensive line, you know, you start scouring other teams, you know it's going to be real slim pickings to even get a quality player off another team because whatever people leaving out there. Like, you think the Cowboys roster is the only one that's got a Malik Davis at that 3-4 running back spot? Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's just, you know, I mean, you can get running back. So, if you think that that's a surprise, yeah, sure, that's a possible name. I mean, I say that because when I did my last 53, you know, I looked at running back and I'm like, yeah, you might have to go lean here because there's some other positions that it sucks, but they're just more valuable positions. So you might have to go like with an extra DB or defensive lineman. And if it means going with an extra DB or defensive lineman and I can't keep my number 3 or 4 running back, well, you do what you got to do. And you hope that the guy doesn't get claimed by somebody else and you can bring him back. But if you can only go with, you know, Pollard, Rico Dowdle, and Deuce, you do it. But no, there's not any big surprises to make the team either. I mean, for a while there, I was thinking it could be John Stevens, but now with this, it kind of, you know, sorts itself out there. So, there's not really a major surprise for me on offense.
Yeah, I think surprise cut for me would probably be along those lines. Kelvin Joseph, maybe Nashawn Wright as well. If something happened there. Again, cutting C.J. Goodwin doesn't seem like a surprise at all. I wouldn't be surprised by that at all, but he has been the special teams guy. But they just have other guys at corner who can actually play corner. And so that would be surprising, or that would not be super surprising. Offensively, if you're asking me for a surprise, I was going to say probably Hendershot if Stevens was healthy, but I wouldn't say Hendershot now, but I'd say maybe Sean McCune. Like, he... If you're asking for a surprise guy, if they're going to roll with their three being, you know, Ferguson, Schoonmaker, and Hendershot, maybe Sean McCune is the one that could be surprisingly cut.
What about Turpin?
It would surprise me if he got cut. Yeah. It would surprise me if he got cut. I would say, I get where people would come from because they would say, oh, well, Deuce can do the returning stuff and things like that. I don't think that they've shown, I'm trying to think how to word this. Okay, they're not playing a lot of their starters because they want to keep these guys healthy for sure.
Yeah.
But there's also a part of it, they don't want to show anything yet either. And I think some stuff for Kevontae Turpin and Deuce Vaughn and things like that, you know, that's one of the, to be honest with you, if I'm looking back on training camp and I'm thinking of all the press conferences and all the stories I've read and everything that's being talked about, I will say one storyline that is barely ever even discussed this past month, at least nothing that I've heard or read, is just how much the offense could benefit from the fact of, for a long time now, there's been tendencies with the Cowboys, you know, that, whether it be they had Jason Garrett, then they go to Linehan, then they go to Kellen Moore. You know, there's a lot of things that the NFC East is probably used to. With Mike McCarthy calling plays, I do think there'll be some things that they do once the season starts that they would never show during training camp or during the preseason, because that's going to be one of the advantages they have is, hey, we can do some of this stuff that we never did before and teams are going to have to adjust to. And now, obviously, it's the NFL. They will adjust right away within a couple games of seeing it. People will adjust. But it makes me look forward to this opener more so than I've looked forward to an opener in a while.
Yeah, and also with Turpin, the other thing is, you know, as much as they're not trying to show stuff for sure, even then, they've still lined him up in the backfield. They still have, you know, played him out wide. They've used him in different ways that makes you feel like, you know, they wouldn't just be wasting those reps for a guy who they thought was a bubble player. He seems like a guy that just is part of their plans offensively more than anything.
I was watching this video the other day on Twitter of it might have been the NFL Network put it up, but then again, it was probably just someone that stole it from them. But it was like Dak's like top 10 longest throws or something like that. And like two of them were these basic screens to Zeke. And it just made me think about how much the screen game has gone away for the Cowboys, you know, and how much that could really come back with a Turpin, with a Vaughn, you know, with a new offensive set of eyes at offensive coordinator, a play caller, new offensive line coach. Like, I can see them really trying to make that work because there just seems like, whether you're talking about Pollard or Deuce Vaughn or Turpin, there seems like there is just that opportunity that if you just call the screen at the right time, that they could be these huge plays. And also, just so you don't think I'm an idiot, I also factor in that you have to have an offensive line that kind of has some cohesiveness that plays together, and that Cowboys have not obviously had that for a few years. So that's factored into it too. Whereas early in Zeke's career, man, that offensive line was clicking, Zeke was clicking, and some of those screens were just monstrous. So I'm interested to see how they're trying to work that back in and maybe have some success there.
I'm also with those three guys that you just mentioned, Turpin, Vaughn, and Pollard. I'm also curious, like, if the Cowboys, I don't think that they'll be at this level, but I'm curious. You always have innovation going on in the NFL. You know, we always say it's a copycat league, but someone has to start it. I think back to the 2007 Patriots and the way Wes Welker became this guy, and then everybody else was the next Wes Welker after that, you know, all the way down to Cole Beasley, whoever else. I wonder if Mike McCarthy and Schottenheimer can create some sort of thing, some sort of new thing that out of this like running back, small receiver situation that maybe is a little bit different than even what, you know, we've seen running backs being used. Obviously the, why am I blanking on McCaffrey? We've seen like guys like McCaffrey. It wouldn't be brand new to have your running backs run routes and stuff, but maybe different roles. I mean, they have a lot of pieces to do different things with.
Yes. It used to be what, thunder and lightning, fire and ice,
smash and dash,
all those things. Now, John, I'll spend about 10 minutes on this before we get out of here. John, you wrote a big piece on The Athletic. This is kind of a series. You kind of got kicked off 3 years ago or so, and it's ranking the NFL stadiums. And I thought it was great. You got all the other writers at The Athletic who are covering teams to kind of pitch in as well, and you kind of just did a big survey. Kind of walk us through your methodology here.
Yeah, so it started out 3 years ago where I was like, I would like to just write a piece on what are the five best and five worst stadiums in the NFL. And at that time, you know, I hadn't been to all of them. I still haven't been to all. I got four left that I haven't been to. I haven't been to Vegas yet, and I haven't been to Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Baltimore. But I felt like I had a good grasp on it, so I was like, let me see what the other writers think, you know. And I was going to turn it into like maybe like a 1,500 word like blog post or something. Well, when I started putting together the results, I was like, oh, you can rank the entire league off of this because there's just so many. When you ask 30 people to rank the top five and bottom five of 30 stadiums, there's going to be a ton that just don't fall in either category, and you can see where they start ranking in the middle there. So yeah, is it the perfect thing? No, but it's also one of those things where, you know, I'm not writing a book on the stadiums. It's not my only job. So if I do it this way, I can still cover the Dallas Cowboys and kind of do this on the side. So when I read in the comments, people talk about how like, oh, you know, this could have been done so much better and so much. It's 3,000 words. I'm sorry I didn't break it down into 1,000 words per stadium, but
I'm personally offended, John.
It annoyed me because this is the biggest thing I'll say about it. So out of those 30 stadiums, the way it ranked, when it was all said and done and I looked at them, I was like, yep, I've been to 26 of these and really have zero arguments with any of this list. I mean, there is a very clear top tier. There's a very clear middle tier, and there's a very clear third tier. You could say there's a fourth tier, that's Washington all by itself, but we're going to put Washington clearly because they are the worst. That is the worst stadium by far. It might deserve its own tier, but I just laugh at anyone like that. If, for example, I'm from Detroit, I've been to Ford Field many times. It's an okay stadium. It's fine. It's in the middle of the pack. No one's going to go out of their way to go to Ford Field. It's like, you know, unless you're, you know, team's playing there, you've always wanted to go, it's a different stadium, that's fine. I'm not going to break it down into like, you know, 700 words about Ford Field. You know, it ends up, I think it ended up around 15 this year. It ended up about 15 3 years ago. And so many of the other stadiums are like that. But it's about that top tier is what's most interesting to me. That's why I always started it with like, what do you think are the top five stadiums? And so I really have no argument with it, and I will say when I was done reading all the rankings and putting it together, being a person that covers the Cowboys, I will say the AT&T Stadium still stacks up with the best in the league, and you hear that from most of the other writers too, that, you know, it's not, I think there's six or seven stadiums now that are newer than it. It's 14 years old now, and it's really, you know, stood up the test of time. Now, when I say that, I understand that Cowboys fans would be like, it's not a great home field advantage. And I get that, but if you're going in there as just a fan, just how clean the place is, how spacious it is, how big the, you know, aisleways are, the fact that, you know, it has a retractable roof and doors, just the big screen, I understand it's the big screen's so nice that it distracts from watching the field. I guarantee it. But my big thing is that all those things that I'm saying, you can say those about any of the stadiums. None of them are perfect, you know? So
yeah.
Like Minnesota was number one. It was number one 3 years ago. I would vote it, you know, top two or three. I think it's outstanding. But I also like a stadium that has outdoor capabilities. I like the retractable roof. You know, I like the stadiums where it can be indoor or outdoor. So I favor that where somebody else might not, you know. And did we factor in concession stands and all that? No, probably not, because we're writers. But I also thought this is the best way to go about it, because who else do you know other than other writers that have been to most stadiums? Unless you're friends with former players, are you gonna call up fans? Tell me whoever out of all of your friends is the most diehard NFL fan, and tell me how many stadiums that person's been to. Have they been to half? Have they been to 10?
No.
So why would I turn less. To the, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I would love the perfect way to rank stadiums, but I don't know that it exists. And the way that we've done it, I'd put our ranking up against anyone's.
Well, we end up with a good number four for the Cowboys. I wonder how much concerts come into play. You know, I think the game day experience is great. My complaint about AT&T Stadium is the sound is not good from a concert standpoint. That's my complaint about AT&T Stadium. Oh, and parking.
Price. The sun?
You know what? The sun is self-imposed. But yeah, I mean, I think it's clearly like, yeah, top, you know, tier of NFL stadiums, or top, you know, 10.
Definitely.
You're number four again. Haven't been to all of them, so I don't really know. You had Lambeau there at number three, which I have been to. Like, you can talk about that. Yeah, sure. I think Lambeau's great. Lumen Field, I think in Seattle, is great. I think it's really cool, that setup with the baseball field right across too, and on the water. I think Lumen's really nice. Minnesota number one's cool. I didn't go in, but like seeing it, you know, for that Super Bowl year.
It's built by the same company that built AT&T, so there's a lot of similarities in terms of very clean, big, spacious, all that. Now, it's indoor, but it does have the glass like SoFi does, where, you know, you get a lot of natural sunlight because of the glass like that, you know, and then they have the glass that, you know, faces downtown Minneapolis, and so that's awesome. But I'd say one of the things that puts it over the top is their in-game presentation for NFL games is the best in the league. I mean, the fake snow, just like the graphics, the sounds, like every, you know, music they play, the whole, you know, skull chant,
they close the game with purple rain every time.
Yeah,
as people are walking out, purple rain's blasting. It's so perfect. So good.
Yeah, Minnesota really knocks it out of the park.
I need to get to Arrowhead, which is number six on the list. I don't want to spoil all of it. I want you all to go click on it, right? Go click on that and read it. That's one, though, that I kind of have on the, like, okay, there's the bucket list. Like, Arrowhead's got to be one that you got to stop off at some point, especially in the Patrick Mahomes era. I need to put money aside to hit Arrowhead at some point. That would be fun. Now, a couple of fun at the back end of it here, John. Clearly, FedEx Field, as you mentioned. Was there anyone back there at the bottom that you were kind of surprised, like, oh, I didn't think about that one. How in bad shape that stadium is, or how you know, maybe not good. Like,
I would say Soldier Field falling as far as it did from the previous ranking. That one surprised me, just because maybe it was overranked the first time we did it, but it was a top 10 stadium 3 years ago. It was by far the biggest dropper, and then to fall out of the top 20. Now, of course, there's plenty of talk of them moving out of it, and there's just a lot of complaints about the way the stadium, it's just really not that great anymore. And, you know, traffic, parking, all the stuff you mentioned before, but then also a lot of complaints about the food and just how it's not a great stadium anymore. I've been there as a fan a couple times. I've covered two or three games there. That might be the one where I would be like, yeah, I think that's lower than it probably should be. I think I would have Soldier Field in my top half, so maybe 16th or 17th. I don't think I would have it in the 20s. That one probably surprised me the most. And to get it dragged down that far, the reason why it was is because it was in several writers' bottom five. And so that really surprised me, because I was just kind of like, now, of course, every writer hasn't been to every single stadium. I mean, it's tough. I mean, you know, I mean, one of the reasons I didn't go to, you know, I haven't been to Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Baltimore, you know, that lined up with the COVID year, you know. And even if I did go to those stadiums, Is that the same thing with no fans in the stand? You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
And then the other thing I will point out too, Las Vegas. How can you adequately, or accurately, I should say, rank it when it's just not going to be a stadium that a lot of people have gotten to? Where yes, it opened at the same time as SoFi, but SoFi's had a Super Bowl, so a lot more writers would have had a chance to go to that. And then it also has two NFL teams playing at SoFi, whereas sure. the Raiders are the only one that play in Vegas. So I feel like if I do this 3 years from now, I feel like from everything I've heard about Allegiant, I haven't been there yet, I think it'll be one of the top five stadiums. It sounds like it's great. It's right by the Strip, you know, and it sounds like it'll be one of those where it's a major destination. But Soldier Field falling as far as it did was probably my biggest surprise.
Well, we'll be back. That's a great piece. Y'all go check that out as well. Sod and John had some stuff up, but also John's stadium piece, which was featured heavily in The Athletic today. Getting a lot of buzz around the globe. They're talking about this globally. It is amazing too how many middle of the mall stadiums there are too. Like looking at the names as well as like the Tennessee Titans, Nissan City. Sure, it's a fine place. I'm sure, it's a great place to see a game. I'm like, yep, that's where it needs to be, right there in the middle of the list. There we go. And you know what? When I think of the Titans, right there in the middle of the league. Just where they need to be.
They're working on a new one too. They're working on a new one. They're going to get a new one pretty soon too.
Spice it up on Broadway. For Father John Mashoda, for Saad Youssef, for Kent, I am Kevin. And we'll be back next week. We've got Raiders on Saturday night. It is not a dress rehearsal. That does not exist anymore, it seems. And we will get to the preseason, and then maybe we'll handle up on that. Maybe we'll get some full season picks and all the fun stuff that we do every single year. But that'll be next week on About Them Cowboys. Bye.
Austin Powers,